You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
Welcome to this episode of the Business of Practice podcast, where we focus on the business and human sides of equine veterinary medicine. In this episode, we're going to talk with Dr. Martha Malicote about creating a plan for educational loans in the new changed environment. I'm your host, Dr. Amy Grice, business consultant and former equine practice owner. The Business of Practice podcast is brought to you in 2025 by Care Credit. Dr. Martha Malicote earned her Bachelor of Science in 2000 at the College of Charleston School of Business and Economics. In 2006, she graduated with her DVM from the University of Tennessee College of Veterinary Medicine. After an internship, she completed a residency at the University of Florida College of Veterinary Medicine and became a diplomat of the American College of Veterinary Internal Medicine in 2012. In 2019, she completed her Master's of Business Administration at the University of Florida. Dr. Malicote is a Weeks Endowed Clinical Associate Professor at the University of Florida College of Veterinary Medicine in the Large Animal Clinical Sciences Department. She teaches veterinary students in the classroom, the Large Animal Hospital, and in the veterinary business curriculum. She's the director of the Veterinary Business Certificate Program for DVM students, a program that prepares them to own and operate their own veterinary practices. Welcome again, Dr. Malicote.
Thank you. I'm so glad to be back on the podcast again.
Yeah, it's always fun to have you. We're just in a new environment here, and many veterinarians, current students, pre-vet students are just absorbing all the changes that are upcoming in federal educational loans and feeling confused and kind of afraid. There is a lot to unpack here, but first, do you have any advice for controlling the emotional toll this is taking on people?
Absolutely. I mean, the emotional aspect of this and the stress that it generates is probably one of the single biggest challenges with managing these educational loans. And the uncertainty that we've been dealing with over the last, say, 6 months has been, I think, the worst part. And so the way that I'm looking at it, at least now we have some answers and people can start to make a plan. The thing that I encounter amongst many veterinary students and graduates who are trying to figure out what to do is that they haven't really made a plan. They haven't assessed their options. They haven't done those things that we've actually talked about before on this podcast about budgeting and knowing where they stand financially. And it seems like the solution to ignore it, but in fact, coming up with a plan and a strategy ultimately alleviates that stress. And the fact that we have some more details with which to make those plans now, I think is going to be a step in the right direction. There's a lot of detail there. So each of those different groups, graduate veterinarians that are already in repayment and may have to change their plans, are in a different situation than current students and students that are starting this fall. But there's more information for all of them to try to make actions based on.
And, you know, when even if you go through and you figure out what your actual situation is, and you're kind of like, oh, boy, it's better to know so that you can make a plan. I'm a planner. Can you tell?
No, you're absolutely right. I think sometimes the biggest stress comes from people being backed into having no choice because they didn't make a plan or didn't really have an accurate assessment of what things were going to look like. And so they've made a professional path that they thought was the right answer and then discover that that perhaps hasn't set them up for the same success they had hoped for. And I feel terrible when I hear about those situations, but some of that can probably be alleviated by a little bit of anticipation of what your numbers are going to look like as a graduate.
Right, right. And especially for current students, you know, maybe you can make slightly different choices along the way.
Absolutely.
So what are the fundamental changes to the system?
Well, there are several, and I would kind of put them in buckets that apply to two different groups of people. For graduates who are currently managing their student loans, the choices for repayment have changed. There's some good news there and some bad news there, and we can talk about some of those details. But the array of repayment plans that were income-driven has been made smaller. The good news is that there are some positive things in the plans that we're left with, but that choice has been made smaller, and there are some negatives there for certain borrowers. The other side of this coin is that for current students and newly starting students, there are significant changes in the loans they have access to and the amount that they're allowed to borrow. And so that group is in a very different situation. This is probably the single biggest finding that's going to impact new and incoming students, is that there have been limits set on the amount of loans that will be allowed for professional students, for graduate students, and those are for unsubsidized federal loans, which are the typical loans that most graduate and professional student borrowers are utilizing. They're unsubsidized. Unlike undergraduate loans, they're not having their interest paid by the government while you're in school. You're accumulating interest. And those previously had some limits in that you would borrow up to the extent that you were allowed to borrow as an unsubsidized loan, and then you might add on what's called a graduate plus loan. It's at a slightly higher interest rate, but was an option to borrow further. And there really wasn't a practical limit on those dollars. There were limits, but not that were realistically a concern for a veterinary student. The new rules are that the professional students are allowed to borrow up to $50,000 a year in an unsubsidized loan. The graduate plus loans that used to be used to supplement that are being phased out completely and will not be available after next July. And so the secondary option for additional borrowing beyond that $50,000 annually is going to be private loans. So not an educational loan at all. And that's probably the single biggest change, because for many veterinary students, their cost of attendance is greater than that $50,000. So the limits are $50,000 per year, $200,000 per degree for all professional students. Not that this makes us feel any better as a veterinarian, but MD students, DO, dental students, all are being subjected to the same rules, and their cost of attendance is honestly in general higher than veterinary students. That is probably the single biggest change that will impact decision-making going forward for veterinary students. Beyond that, the repayment plans are changing, and we can dive more into the details of like what's going to change now, what will change in a few years. There are going to be different income-driven plans available, but those are the big kind of front-end borrowing things that are changing. Additionally, Parent Plus loans, which most professional students weren't using, are being phased out as well. They're going to be quite limited, so that is really not going to be something that you can have as a backup plan beyond. The good news is, for those that are familiar with public service loan forgiveness, which is a program that has been long in play for professional students, that has really been untouched. So the good news is that that program is still in play completely.
Thank goodness, because, wow, there was a lot of worry about, is that going to disappear? Are all the years that I've already given to that program going to disappear? And it didn't. It was good.
The Business of Practice podcast is brought to you by Care Credit. Care Credit keeps equine veterinarians at the heart of care by providing horse owners with simple, budget-friendly financing options. By helping to bridge the gap between cost and care, Care Credit supports healthy financial relationships between veterinarians and their clients. Clients have a flexible way to pay over time for all types of care, and practices get paid in 2 business days. It's a payment experience everyone can feel good about.
What about those people that have debt in the SAVE program, which as of August 1st is now accumulating interest, but you can't, I don't think you can make payments on it. It's like dead in the water, accumulating interest. What should they do?
Absolutely. It's a great question. So the SAVE plan is the newest plan that was put into place by the last administration, but a lot of our veterinary borrowers switched into SAVE because it was a very beneficial income-driven plan. And as of August 1st, you are again accumulating interest. We've been in a waiting period of nothing happening. So while you are now accumulating interest, there are no payments to be made. So the options are, if you are in a quite dire financial situation and the benefit of not making a payment, of remaining in forbearance, is the most important thing for you, you can stay in the SAVE plan. Not forever, but in the short run. I don't recommend that for really anybody except someone that in the short term has a pretty dire financial scenario. But what you can do is switch out of a SAVE plan, and you can switch into the existing plans that are continuing, at least in the short term. So pay as you earn, income contingent, or income based, so IBR, ICR, or pay. You can switch into any of those right now. Several of them are going to go away in July 2028, but financially they can be a better deal between now and then. And so even though it feels like a very short-term decision, you may roll into pay-as-you-earn or ICR in the short run. For most borrowers, rolling into pay-as-you-earn is probably the best option. The payments are typically the lowest based on the calculation factors that are used, and your unpaid interest won't capitalize if you roll from save into pay-as-you-earn. So even though that's not a forever solution, that's a for now solution that is probably the most financially advantageous. Their new repayment plan, because we need more abbreviations, the RAP or Repayment Assistance Plan, that will start next July. And we have some of the details about it, but because it's not actually in action yet, I would warn everyone to be cognizant that the details might change a little bit. If you look at what they're saying right now, for most borrowers, the Repayment Assistance Plan will have a higher payment than pay-as-you-earn, but a lower payment than the income-based plan that will continue after July 2028. So that's where using the comparison tools that we have to look at payments, repayment time, total cost of the loan are really continue to be very, very important. Because I've just given 7,000 different details about how this all fits together, and it's hard to follow. But for most borrowers, the short-term answer is, if you can afford it and you want to start logging payments again, which is helpful as you work towards forgiveness, you probably should need to switch into pay-as-you-earn.
Excellent advice. What about other borrowers? You know, so we're going to approach the end of the current repayment plans, and they're going to go away in 2028. The new options are mid-2026.
Yep.
Does it make any sense for people to switch before the other plans go away in 2028? I mean, like, how do you figure it out? What are the resources to?
No, that's a great question. For most borrowers, it will not be financially advantageous if you're already in a repayment plan so you can stay in one if you're not a current student, to stay in one of the currently existing ones. So pay-as-you-earn, IBR, ICR. If we compare your potential payments and the calculation factors for each of them vary, most of the time, nearly all the time, those plans are better than the RAP, the new plan. The RAP plan is not terrible, but the payments will be slightly higher. So I would say that between now and 2028, I would continue to take advantage of those lower payments in the existing repayment programs. Get yourself settled into one if you're in save right now. Identify which is the best choice for you, depending upon your graduation year. If you're a more experienced veterinarian, you may have limited choices to swap into, but identify the best one and get into that and get those 3 years of payment credits at that lower cost. And then at the end of it, in 2028, when those programs are all phased out, you will be forced to roll into the new RAP and or stay in the IBR plan, because that will be the remaining one. And at that point, you can decide which is financially the most advantageous. So how do you make those decisions? Repayment calculators are your friend. There are several available. There is one available on the studentaid.gov website that is administered by the Department of Ed. I have utilized it in the past. It is typically a good repayment calculator. I have heard that recently, with a lot of the changes that are going on, updating that payment calculator has not necessarily been very speedy. It's not giving everyone very accurate numbers. So it is a resource, but in the very recent last couple weeks past, I have heard that it's giving some folks incorrect information. So the alternative that's available that is an excellent resource for veterinarians is on the VIN Foundation website. And I know that you guys have talked about this before, but there are several veterinarians that offer advice on forums and tons of publications on there. But there is also a calculator on there that is tailored to veterinarians. So it asks you all the right questions about our income, about the kinds of loans that you might have. It's a very savvy way of making us as smart as possible by really being tailored to our needs. And that calculator can do a lot of the same things, but I have a little bit more confidence right at this moment in the information it's giving you. And it'll share information like, what are your payments going to look like? How long is the repayment period? What is the actual effective interest rate with the reality of what amount you might get forgiven at the end of those loans? And so you can compare those numbers across the options that are feasible for you and choose the one that's the best financial option.
Do people still have to save money for taxes? I'm sort of thinking that
they do. There was a short period of time from like 2021 to 2025 that when loans were income-driven repayment loans were forgiven, when people got to the end of their terms, we were not charging them those taxes on it. But that was a short run, kind of a COVID related, generosity that did not get renewed. And so you will still be responsible for paying income taxes on the amount that's forgiven at the end of that loan repayment period. The thing I always like to say is that 22 or 30% of $100,000 is still less than $100,000. So yes, you will have to pay taxes, and they are due in the year that loan is forgiven. So you have to plan ahead for it, but you've got 15 or 20 years to plan for it. And that's just another savings bucket that you need to attend to. Your payments on your loans will be less, but then we need to plan for that loan, the taxes you'll owe. And the VIN calculator specifically will actually include a calculation of how much do you need to be saving, literally monthly, to plan for that tax payment at the end.
That is very cool that they put that in there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. Because otherwise, could you imagine arriving that year and you're like, phew, finally done with that. Oh God, you know.
Absolutely. No, it is absolutely something to be cognizant of, but the calculator I'm talking about takes into account the cost of that in addition to the cost you're paying on your loan, and will also coach you on what you should be saving.
Cool. Okay. But what about current students and pre-vet students? What should they be thinking? What should they be doing?
So I guess my message to current and pre-vet students is, first of all, the sky is not falling. We are still going to have some income-based repayment options. That is not going to be our limiting factor. There are options available. You know, are the payments slightly more than they were in some of the plans where they're being retired? Yes, but they are still available. So there are things that exist that will be advantageous for us. The biggest challenge for current and incoming students is those maximums on loans. And so if you are an in-state student at a typical kind of a state school, veterinary school, you can potentially, you know, get away with a $50,000 a year cost of attendance. That is still in play as in-state students in several places. If you are an out-of-state student, if you are attending an offshore school, if you are attending an international AVMA accredited school, those costs of attendance are typically higher than $50,000 and maybe a good deal higher than that. And so the biggest factor for you is going to be trying to figure out how you're going to deal with that difference between what you're allowed to borrow and what your cost of attendance will be. And when we think of cost of attendance, that's tuition and books. That's like the school part of it, but also your cost of living while you're a student. And there are some calculators that are used to determine how much you should be allowed to borrow based on what that should, quote unquote, cost you. And that's where they come up with that cost of attendance number. So for some students, that might mean that they need to figure out how to bridge a gap financially. Does that mean they look to savings? Maybe a returning student who's been in the workforce for some time and may have some savings they could use. Maybe family contributions. Students that are adults, they file their FAFSA and apply for their loans as an independent person, but they may still have families that are willing to help contribute to their education. Veterinary students that are in a partnership or have a spouse that may be working often can also kind of reduce their own expenses because they have someone in their family that is already in the workforce and has an income. So that can help. The big concern I have for me is that leaves a big gap for individuals who don't have things like family support or haven't been able to work and save. And that's a substantial part of the veterinary student population. We have a lot of students who are, you know, who struggle to pay for the cost of attending veterinary school. And so those students are going to really need to think hard about what are the options that are best available to them. Are they going to seek a lot of scholarship work? Are they going to try to figure out how they're going to be able to work as a veterinary student? How tight can they get their budget? Can they really work that budget down so that they can take on roommates or can identify a living situation where perhaps they're sharing part of their cost of rent for doing a bit of work on a farm or a relationship like that? Some way that they might be able to better manage their expenses. In no way am I trying to judge somebody and try to say, don't spend any money. But, you know, if you know you have a gap that you need to make up, the last option I want you to choose to make that up with is a private loan, because it's not going to carry any of the protections of a student loan. And so the interest rates will be higher, the protections for you for income-based repayment in the future won't exist. And so that to me is the last ditch option that I want to recommend.
Yeah, when you think about that interest compounding,
yes,
you know, that's terrifying. And how could you possibly be paying it back while you're in school? I mean, you're just not.
Correct. And that, you know, even once you graduate, if you enter into an income-based repayment plan, those private loans that you've taken out won't be eligible to be consolidated in with those student loans. So it's going to be an additional loan burden. Some of our students even start vet school with some private loans, depending upon where they went to undergraduate college. But to me, that's going to be the single biggest factor, is really critically assessing what's going to be the cost where I go to vet school. Is it a good investment? Should I accept this out-of-state offer? Or should I wait a year and try again to be an in-state student at my own state school, where the cost of attendance would be significantly less? My general feeling, despite being on the faculty at a College of Veterinary Medicine that I'm very proud of, is that you will get a good veterinary education at any of our accredited colleges. And so you should make that choice of attendance, at least partially based on the cost of attendance.
I agree wholeheartedly.
So that's a bit of a negative message, perhaps, to current and even more importantly, like pre-vet students. Most current students will be able to eke out with the rules and get out the door. But our pre-vet students are really going to need to think long and hard about the financial aspects. The one other thing that I remain optimistic about, but it's not a known quantity yet, is that when we think about these limits that have been placed, they are going to have an even bigger impact on medical school trainees than veterinary school. The cost of attending medical school is larger than attending veterinary school. We're talking about a much larger demand. We need many more doctors, medical doctors, than we need veterinarians to meet existing demand. And their cost of attendance is even higher. So if we're saddling MD students with several hundred thousand dollars of private loans for them to achieve their education as well, that's going to become a crisis. And so that factor, that this is not just a veterinary problem, makes me hopeful that there may be a solution. And that doesn't mean the solution will be available next week. But I'm hopeful that our governmental groups will realize the challenge this presents for medical education in general and reconsider some of what's been put into place.
Yes, that is something that does make me hopeful as well, because there's a shortage of MDs pretty much everywhere. And now they're making it even harder. People are going to turn away and say, you know, I could be an engineer.
Absolutely. Right. Absolutely. Yeah. So, you know, that's where sometimes our work with advocacy with our organizations is equally important. You know, that's going to be a priority for the AVMA and for the allied specialty organizations, that we are getting in front of our legislators to say, this is really not sustainable. And so hopefully we as veterinarians can also get involved in that effort.
Excellent idea. Is there anything else you'd like to share with our listeners today?
Well, this has been a lot of doom and gloom, and I'm sorry about that. I think the thing that I want folks to take from today is that there is a lot more clarity than we had a few months ago, and the uncertainty is the most stressful part about it. There are some positives in this. The new repayment plan that was established, the RAP, is, yes, slightly more expensive, but also includes the protection against continuing to accumulate interest. This is a small detail, but actually an incredibly important one. One of the biggest advantages of the SAVE plan was, if your monthly payment did not pay off the interest that was accumulating that month, they didn't add it back on. Your loan balance wasn't going to continue to go up. It's a tiny thing, but a huge thing. And that was actually retained in the RAP plan, is that you won't continue to accumulate interest if your payment even doesn't pay it. So it's essentially a credit that's being made. And so there are some small positives in and amongst all of this, despite the fact that a lot of it is scary and a little bit overwhelming. And that makes me hopeful for the fact that it will be functional, workable, and we'll continue to see some improvements in these plans.
Yes. And we should all be grateful that loans are available and that these programs even exist. We got used to having these kinds of loans. I mean, they weren't available. I mean, there were federal loans, but the income-based repayment was not available. I mean, you had to, back in the day, many, many years ago, you consolidated.
There were a lot less repayment options. Yeah.
I consolidated all my loans and then I paid them off over the next 25 years. And of course, a dollar was worth a lot less by the end of the 25 years. And I, of course, was a successful veterinarian by then. So those loans were kind of like really didn't even matter by then. But starting out, it is scary. But what I'll say is, it'll get better.
It certainly will. And I think there are some opportunities for those of us who are more experienced in our profession to look at how can we be novel about giving back. You know, there's been a lot of discussion in the last few years about how we can support scholarships and support veterinary trainees. And some really exciting and novel things have come down the pike, certainly, especially with the AAP, some big scholarships that have really been life-changing for veterinary students and allowed them to really enter equine practice. And, you know, are there some places where we can continue to do that and help our potential future equine veterinarians to make that choice successfully without financial burdens? So that's a bit on us, but that's a way we can give back to the profession that's been so good to us.
It's a wonderful thing to end with, you know, the ways that we can give back, because there were lots of people that came before us that not only taught us, mentored us, but gave to make our lives better. Thank you so much for joining us today, Dr. Malicote, and thank all of you listeners for joining us for the Business of Practice podcast, and a big thanks to our sponsor, Care Credit. And to all my listeners out there, be brave, embrace change,